Hi, it's Bill from Torg Stories at thetorg.com, Tuesday, August 9th, 2016 edition. This week I learn about river people. What or who are they? I met David Donnell, owner of the Asheville Outdoor Center, when he did me the good deed of helping my family to make our first 48-hour film project movie. They put my oldest daughter in a kayak and then kept a raft next to her so we could film her on the French Broad River. Our conversation was going strong even before I got the camera turned on. This is a video podcast available at thetorg.com, and an audio-only version is available by searching for Torg Stories wherever you get your podcast. This week's conversation fits right in with the film we're making about the French Broad River. I learned a lot. Hope you enjoy it.
So I'm here with Dave. Dave, tell us about where we are. Like, we're in Asheville, North Carolina, yeah. But where is, what's this place called?
What's our physical spot?
That's right.
One of the things that I created a long time ago, and this was part of what the vision of what I had in mind, was when I bought this property, we're at 521 Amboy Road. We're right here along the French Broad River. This was, in my mind, the gateway to the river park greenways. And that was long before there were any river parks or greenway trails. And so I continue to refer to this space as the gateway to the River Arts District, which is just downstream of us. It's to the numerous breweries that are in the area. It's to the paddling opportunities. It's to those that are running, walking, enjoying the riverfront. So we're here at my office of 25 years. We are still in the city limit of Asheville.
When we go from, I'm sort of getting acclimated to the fact that there might be something like a beginning of the French Broad River, which they, mile zero, the headwaters.
There is.
Goes about 149 miles or so.
Yeah.
Where are we on the river?
We are about mile 72 on the river. So the river is in fact 217 miles from the headwaters in Rosman to Douglas Lake. So you'll start at mile zero. You approach this point, you'll be in the 70s. We believe this is mile marker 72.
Tell us about obtaining this piece of property.
That's a good one. So I believe I'm here 18 years, 25 years in business. So for 4, 5, 6 years, I had another location. It was not on the river. It was close to the put-in, but I also recognized that we needed to have easy access to both the put-in and the takeout. So every fall, I would go to the courthouse and I would manually script through properties owned along the river. This is a long time ago, long before the internet was such a useful tool, long before email, long before digital communication that said, quickly give me the information.
1995-ish.
Yeah, 92. Actually, the very year I started, 1992, the DOT announced that they were going to be taking the property that I rented as new road improvement. So I knew right then that I needed to start, if I was going to continue a business as a paddle sport company, which is how we refer to it. We do canoes, we do kayaks, we do rafts, we do paddle boards, but we refer to it as a paddle sport, not a specific rafting or
sure,
canoe.
Sure, right, yep.
So then it would simply be go to the courthouse, find those addresses, go physically walk to them, drive to them, and then it was knock on doors and find somebody that would be willing to talk to me to even entertain the idea, would you want to sell your property? So this property really quite literally came to me. It was 1996, and it was the spring, and a real estate agent contacted me and said, are you interested in a piece of riverfront property? Of course, I had done all this research, so I had this folder of things right. That said where things were, where properties were. So, well, what property are you referring to? And he said, well, we're talking about a piece of property on Amboy Road. I said, okay, yes, I'm very interested. So that was on a Friday. We came and looked at it, and we sat here. My wife and I sat here literally for about 2 days just to sit and kind of talk about it. And really for me, it was in the visionary state that I really felt I was in, not in a hallucinogenic state, not in a kind of a weird moment, but I do have this concept of vision of what it should look like. And so we sat right over here where the pavilion is,
What was here? That was it. Woods.
There was no. This was a. This was called Bell Sand Company. So it was a sand dredging company, and there's still parts of it that are still, really, the tower was part of the dredge. The areas right here along the river, there's still a very deep body of water right here where the dredge actually pulled the material out. So that just transferred into ownership. We sat here. My wife thought I was crazy. It was a dead-end, derelict piece of property. And my neighbor, who is now the RV park, it was even worse shape, derelict. And so then we acquired the property. And the vision started, quite literally.
Right. So a lot's changed since you got started, and that's hours and hours of conversation. What are some big things that jump out to you that have shifted since you opened up here?
Paddle sports or just community or?
Anything that jumps. It could be about Asheville. It could be about paddle sports.
Yeah, if we just talk about paddle sports, lots of growth, yeah. Lots of recognition of that it's an activity to do. The paddle sports in the last, say, 8 years has definitely dramatically been recognized nationally.
Right.
By other entities that have that accreditation that say that this is a cool place to go and do paddle sports. So then you have that other part of it, the local community, people like me, other outfitters, other companies that do paddle sports. More people.
So I mean, on the one hand, you might think there's so many more people out on the river than there used to be. Good for Dave. However, competition has increased mm-hmm. a lot. Is it still, it's a great business?
Is it still good for Dave?
Is it still good for Dave?
Oh, it's still a great business. The Asheville Outdoor Center's been, for 25 years, has continually seen progress as far as its financial status. We don't look at it as a detriment. For 20 years or so, I always was curious as to why no one else was doing it.
Right.
Did I make the wrong choice?
Uh-huh.
But I think it just took a long time for recognition, the idea to kind of catch up with what my vision was a long time ago. It was just that simple. It just took a long time for the rest of the pieces, and there's a lot of the pieces. It's not just paddle sports or the river. Because there's a lot of people that use the river not as a paddler. They want to just enjoy it. They want to fish, or they want to view it from the bank out, or they jog past it, or they picnic by it. So the advent of the Greenway Trail mm-hmm. that is right in front of us has brought lots of people from what was an end of the park. Now it's an extension of the park, and they see more of it. The literal view of the river, they're seeing more of it. So
we, talking about the grounds more, I think one, as a sometimes customer of businesses like yours, the fact that you get out here, right? Do you get out here?
Do I get out here?
Do people get out of the water here when they finish
the
trip?
This can be the end of a trip, or this can be the beginning of a trip. Primarily, this is the takeout.
Yeah.
And back to land acquisition and when I bought it,
right?
I'd been in some element of paddling prior to the business. So we knew what it was like to go from put in to take out. You put in the river, you float, and you take out. No matter what body of water, if you're on a river, you have to have those two components. So when we saw this and the float that it gave us, the time, the length of trip, where it was going, and that was key. It was going through the Biltmore Estate property, 8,000 acres, private protected piece of wilderness. You're in the middle of Asheville, but you're in the middle of nothing out there. So when the takeout became the end point for my business, that was perfect. The timing that the guests needed to be on the water was up to them.
That's right.
They could go at any time of day or whatever schedule times we had, and then they arrive here at the end of the day, whatever time that was.
Yeah, I was going to say
that the takeout is a very...
That would be really appealing to me, I don't have to wait on everybody to get back, et cetera, et cetera.
Many outfitters would really work hard to be the takeout.
Got a really nice takeout here.
Thank you.
And you were telling me before we started that a lot of the stuff on the property you have made.
Yep.
Tell us more about, I'll show people who are watching the video format later. Tell us about
How it went.
How it went, right.
So back to the vision, back to the idea. When I first acquired the property, there was nothing here. if we were to pan out, we'd see the building, the pavilions, the towers, the structures. None of that was here. The one structure that was here was the building with no side sheds or roof lines or anything else. The other thing that wasn't here were trees. So
wow.
Every tree, every plant, every piece of landscape was put in by me because I felt that that was important to encompass how the paddle sport community would see the property in 20 years. Like, oh, this is shady and it's casual and it's comfortable. So one of the first things I did, and this was with the help of my parents, my mom specifically, who's still an avid gardener and has passed that love of gardening, not just vegetable, but flower gardening, onto me, was to plant trees. So all these trees, sycamores, willows, plums, river birch, maples, all of them, everything from fence line over was a planted item that, so 20 years later, now there are these big, mature, shaded areas.
So I sometimes say that, I think you have a tap room now.
We do.
I sometimes say to my wife, we should go down and get a beer at Dave's and the kids can run around in the grass. That's totally a fine thing to do.
That's totally a fine thing to do.
It's got to be one of the most beautiful spots to be able to do that in Asheville.
Well, it definitely is the still, even after 20 years, 25 years, the Asheville Outdoor Center is still kind of an undiscovered secret, which is not a bad thing for me as a business. Too much growth too fast, I might not have been able to keep up.
Right.
So slow growth, this process of build little pieces at a time, stay in control of your finances, don't get overloaded. And now, of course, with the space that we see, that's what people do. They're here today, they'll be here tomorrow, and they do. They come, they picnic, they'll come and gem mine, they'll ride bikes, they'll paddle, they'll come and just simply have a beer by the river. So yeah, all of those are opportunities.
So you told me that this spot we're in right here is one of your favorite spots on
the property.
The
spot right here is definitely.
And you told me, you know, good times and bad.
Yeah.
Tell us, give us some of that.
Some bad times?
Unpack good times and bad right here.
Of course, the good times are when it's sunny out and when it's, you know, everybody feels good or it's a busy day and we know that the business is working. There's elements of bad days. Yesterday, people on the water, thunderstorms come up. We're standing at the point, we call this the point, waiting for the guests to come through and finish because we're concerned because of weather.
Yeah.
So that's a smaller scale of not so good times. The other end of the spectrum of not so good times is when we get too much weather and the river floods, which it's done. We purchased the property in 96, 97. That winter it flooded with full knowledge that it would. It wasn't a mystery. You just have to think in terms of that's what a body of water can do, and you have to prepare for it in a lot of ways. You mentally have to prepare for it, you have to physically prepare for it. And so bad times, definitely. 2013, we had 3 feet of water in the office.
That's what I was gonna ask you, how high up it goes.
Yeah, 2004, the water came to the top of the basketball net.
Wow.
So regulation height basketball, water was
well above the water right now.
Well above the water right now.
20
feet above the water. That was a catastrophic flood, not just for this property or for me or my business, for lots of people involved, which is another part of kind of what river people are. They're compassionate. They understand it. It was difficult for everybody. And that was another beginning and resurgence of the riverfront and the renaissance of it that's happening and has happened since 04. Lots of new stuff coming along.
So you were telling me, I think CFS are the letters you used. You were telling me that you've noticed the river responds differently to rains.
Yeah.
Can you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. Cubic feet per second, CFS. It's a measurement that's used widely for how much flow is in a body of water. So years ago, we would see rainfall 4 to 6 inches and look at the graph, and the CFS measurement would bump up just a little bit. Because what was happening upstream was the rain was being absorbed and taken in by the lands, the farms, or the non-paved surfaces, the just those bodies of property that were taking up water.
Right.
Now, because of development, and that's just That's progress. That's part of it.
You're not necessarily cursing all development.
I'm not necessarily cursing all of the moments that people have found why Asheville's so beautiful and have come to live here.
Right.
Whether it be schools, restaurants, parking lots for car dealerships, other businesses. All of those, as development has been created, close to the river or even off of the fringe of the actual riverfront, we now see a more rapid rise in river CFS because it rains, it hits the rooftops, it hits the impervious surface, it then moves to the creek, to the stream, to the French Broad River. So it's a quicker uptick on the graph, on the scale. So it's a concern as we see weather. We've become very good weathermen too.
Mm.
We have to be.
Right.
We're interested in it. I find it personally interesting, the phenomena of weather, but it's also very applicable to how the business performs and what we can tell our guests. Oh, yep, we believe at 2 o'clock or in that hour that they're going to see thunderstorms. We may not put you out because of that. We don't want you to be in harm's way. We also, it's a difficult retrieval to come and get you.
So when it comes to a little bit more practical, looking at the CFS, you know, I've got daughters 8 and 10. We're going to be doing a lot of the river. What should I pay attention to if I look up that number? Is that the thing that I should, should I look up the CFS before I go out?
It's the USGS site. It's a water data site. Lots of information about the data of the water. Water temperature, gauge height, the CFS. If we get to a CFS of over 5,000, we have a measure in place that says we don't do any canoes. We go to guide assisted. And then there's another element that's arrived on the river, which is a bridge, which is a new bridge, which anywhere between 5,000 and 7,000 CFS, it's very difficult to pass under. Although the group that's put the bridge in has made accommodations to portage around, it's difficult because it's high water and the features right there are not easy to get out. So we're looking at, if it's above 5,000, it's a quick trip, potentially more hazard.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be seeing it and say, oh, the recommendation is anything below 5,000 is okay.
Are all those reasons why you were telling me you like low water? You know,
yep.
When the water's lower?
Yep. Yeah. Lots of reasons why we like low water. Low water is, and there's a point in time where low water can be too low.
Mm-hmm.
But what we like with low water is simply clarity, opportunity to get in and out of the boat safely, picnic on the rocks, the gravel shoals, the areas where you see so much more of this ancient riverbed, which we got to remember, French Broad River, considered third oldest in the world, has lots of changing features as you float through its many sections. So when it's low water, yes, if you're an inexperienced paddler, you may be getting hung up on rocks, and that frustrates people. They feel like they're not doing it right.
Mm.
But you've just bumped into a rock, it's okay.
Right.
And a lot of times they get uncomfortable because they don't know what to do. But then common sense sometimes kicks in and it's like, oh, well, if it's shallow enough to be hung up on a rock, then I can just step out and scooch off.
This might be something hard to talk about as we sit here.
Sure.
But when you're reading the river,
yep.
If you're trying to read a rapid, you know, beginners, couple things to look for, what would you say?
Downstream V. It's a feature that you actually see in the river. So two rocks, the water's pushing through those two rock areas. It creates a downstream V.
Mm-hmm.
It's the point of the V that we would say paddle towards that.
Go toward the Vs.
Go towards the Vs.
See, that's new. I didn't know that, Dave.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Jumping around a little bit
sure.
here. You were saying maybe a little change in lifestyle for you. Tell us about what else you're up to.
Yeah, a little change in lifestyle. I'm a woodworker. I've always been that way. In high school, I was creating state-awarded furniture, so I had a knack for it. I had an interest in it. I went to college for it, partially. And then the business kind of came along, and that kind of changed how much time I had to put towards just indulging myself in woodworking. So now I'm kind of trying to come back to that. It's a love of mine. Just the creation of pieces of wood, furniture, sculpture, working apparatus. There's a water wheel behind you that is done by me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the second wheel that I've done. There may be plans in place to continue to change what the property does and turn it into what I'm calling Riverwood Galleries.
Mm.
And Riverwood Galleries is my space. It's where you can come and view my work. You can come and see me work. And then it also is this really beautiful spot by the river that kind of the two of them are tied together.
So you might move out of paddle sports. Am I using the right phrase?
Yeah.
Paddle sports.
Yeah,
paddle sports. Might move out of paddle sports, not do that anymore, okay. And this becomes, what did you call it?
Riverwood Galleries.
Yeah. What? How concretely is that maybe happening? I mean, where are we in the sort of imagining state?
I could imagine in 5 years.
Yeah.
Sure.
So you were, I think you told me you have a 25-acre farm.
Yeah.
In Weaverville. This is a totally selfish question, but
sure.
if you keep listening to my podcast, then you start to follow the storylines in my life. So we live on like half an acre in South Asheville by Robertson High School. And we're starting to think we would like some land and some space. What are some good spots in the Asheville area that I should be looking for this? It's everywhere. It's hard to find.
We spent a long time. My wife and I spent 3 years. We were caretakers on Town Mountain.
I like the 3 year timeline. That's a good thing to bring home and say.
Yeah. We spent three years looking.
Yeah.
We were younger, of course. We didn't have kids. But we spent 3 years looking. We continually were drawn to the north end of the county and even beyond into Madison County. It's just pure economics, cost of property.
Right.
We had some criteria. We didn't want to be more than 30 minutes from town.
Mm-hmm.
We had some criteria if we were going to start a family. We wanted south and west exposure.
Why did you want that?
Because of how the sun makes you feel and vitamin D and
the evening
sunset feeling,
mm-hmm.
sitting on the deck, enjoying that part of it.
See, I can add that to my criteria.
Yeah.
You know,
it's important.
Yeah.
It was to us. We
definitely want a feeling of openness.
Yeah.
You know, where there's just open ground, whether it's a meadow or
a
field.
So you're asking where do I look?
I don't know. Whatever.
You go north or you go west?
Yeah, north and west.
Yeah, because everything else is kind of absorbed between. If we go south, we're going towards Hendersonville, and everything between there is getting absorbed in development. A little harder to find.
Yeah.
It's just
great.
It's that process of popularity that Asheville's become.
So this is, I think, a little bit also still connected to your family. Tell us about you and paddle sports, and then maybe that brings you in. I think you and your son maybe do some things together.
Yeah.
So were you at one time a huge practitioner of paddle sports and you've toned it down?
No, I'm a Connecticut kid.
Yep.
I grew up on Long Island Sound.
Uh-huh.
I sailed, I surfed, I paddled, I camped, I jet skied, I water skied, primarily a sailor.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of part of my growing up that we were outside. My dad was a 30-year corporate dude, drove and rode the train to New York City, saw him doing that, suit and tie. He was good at it. That's what he liked doing. I didn't see myself wearing a
suit
and tie.
What was the town in Connecticut?
Westport.
Yeah, right.
Westport, Connecticut.
I lived in New Canaan,
yep.
And I lived
Bridgeport,
in Stratford.
Haven,
and yeah.
All up and down the coast.
Okay, so you didn't see yourself doing that.
So I didn't see myself being in a suit and tie. And then there was this other part of me that was this woodworker. So remember, back when I was 18, I'm building and creating furniture that was winning state awards. So
mm-hmm.
there was this other kind of, that kind of in some way drew me away from a corporate style of what I wanted to do.
Right.
Move forward a little bit. Now I'm in Michigan, Upper Peninsula, going to college, and that is where I changed from a art major to an art minor, and I really dug into my being of who I was and said, what do you want to do? So, well, I really like to be outdoors. And so outdoor recreation was that fit me, and that's the path I chose as far as saying, I want to go into outdoor recreation. Move forward another couple of years, graduation, do an intern. So I had to do an internship. Internship, I chose the mountains of Western North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I could have done corporate health, could have done park service, any kind of outdoor entity, but I chose the rafting industry.
Yeah.
I was 21 years old, sounded cool. I'd also had several introductions to paddle sports through my family. We'd done a Grand Canyon River trip as
mm-hmm.
a family, multi-day, multi-mile.
My wife did that when
Grand
she
Canyon
was
trip.
18, 20
yep.
years old, something
so
like that.
So we did that as a group of six, a family of six with others. And then my dad and I did several trips in West Virginia. So when I had to choose a group to say, do this internship, Whitewater rafting sounded really, really fun. So that's what led me to the mountains of Western North Carolina, and then moved forward another couple of years. That was all over. I met my wife, and we were in a place of, what do we do now?
Yeah.
And that's how the paddle sport business began.
So tell me a little bit about the people who work here, and how do you find them?
Yep. The people that work here are awesome. They are very involved. They're very committed. They're very intent on making the process work. Because many of them have been here 5 years, 6 years, 8 years, some as many as 20 of the 25 years. They typically find me through a friend who knows this next person in line. And so many of the staff, they've been students. Some are still in that capacity, even though they're older, they're going to trade school to work through that. So the staff, definitely exceptional group of people. They tend to not go away. They tend to just keep coming back.
Yep.
You know, benefit.
The different, so raft, kayaking, what are the different things you offer here? I think you sort of alluded to like gem mining, but we didn't, you know, what can people do here?
So the property, definitely the property here is multi-use, but in the realm of paddle sports, we offer canoeing, we offer kayaking, we offer the newest thing is the stand-up paddle boarding. We offer the 7 mile trip as a raft trip, but back to conditions and CFS, that changes when we see lower water level. A raft is not the boat to take. So we do them, but only when the conditions are appropriate.
We know, because we did 11 miles in a raft from the headwaters, and it was long, tough. It was set over 7 hours.
We're all about information for the guest. I think that's what kind of sets us apart in some ways. Not from everybody, but what we like to be able to give those that ask or those that don't even know is the information about how to have a nice day on the water and a safe day. Because it's important to me, and then the staff pick up on that, and it's important to them. And so everybody becomes involved with the process. Weather, water level, type of boat, who are the participants? If you come to me and you're a family of four, and you say, Dave, I would like to go canoeing, but my wife and I have never been canoeing, and my two kids are 6 and 8, we would say, don't take a canoe, because that wouldn't be a good mix or a setup for you as an inexperienced boater. It just kind of looks...
So that's the boat that you need the most experience to
it's
run.
It's preferred.
Yeah.
It's preferred. Yeah. We go back to where the trip is. It's a very remote setting. So if you had something happen along the way, it's up to the guest to correct the problem. Canoe tips over. Even in waist-deep water, two adults, even if you can swim fully, it's still kind of a challenge to recover the boat, empty the water, and continue down the river.
We were thinking it might be interesting so I was telling you before we came on, that sort of narrative thread of our film is just 0 to 149.
Yep.
And then it could be interesting for us to change the vehicle or craft that we were traveling in.
You might need to.
Try to do some of that, right? Yeah. What do I have here? Oh, yeah. So you've kind of gotten to this too. What are some things you wish your customers knew before they came?
Wish they knew?
Yeah. For example, it's frustrating when they maybe don't have any idea about how much water levels or weather impacts you.
We want them to know the time that it takes to do the trip. Be prepared.
Yeah.
Drinks, water, sunscreen.
Is it longer than they expect? Is that a common thing that happens?
Longer than they expect. Yeah. Even though we have told them it could be 2.5 hours or 3 on the water, they come back in 2.5 hours and they're like, oh my goodness, that was such a long time. So their concept of time is different.
Sure.
Or they kind of, kids got cranky or it rained on them. We do want them to be informed of the conditions, which we tell them every time a reservation's made, what to do, what to bring, when to arrive.
Are all of the people who work here guides? Are some of them guides? What makes a good guide?
All the staff here assist in the trips.
Okay. So you wouldn't use that word guide?
Mm-mm.
No. You don't do that kind of thing?
No, not so much.
Who are there people around here who teach people to be guides? There's Swiftwater Rescue. I don't know yeah. a lot about that kind of stuff. Yeah. What do you know about it?
There is Swiftwater Rescue. Many of the companies that do a guide in a raft, they uh-huh. have their own training program. And you have to check out as a newbie, as a guide, you have to check out with the company before you're then allowed opportunity to take customers. And that is reading the river, how you interact with the guest, how physical capable you are of maneuvering the craft.
I want to talk about sort of the spirit of people who use the river.
Yep.
And then I want to, don't let me forget, I want to talk about taking care of the river and river yep. cleanups and stuff.
Yep. Very important.
So I've personally experienced at least one of your good deeds, which was that you helped us out making a 48-hour film project where you put my girls in a boat and, you know, we had multiple boats because we had a camera on one boat and they were in the other boats. So that was really generous and kind of you. It tends to be the kind of experience I keep having the more I talk to people mm-hmm. connected to the river. I think there's a couple who calls themselves Yukon and Bean.
Very familiar with those guys.
And I went to their REI talk and they said you shuttled them and, yeah. you know, like, what do you need? So
yeah.
In talking about the river community, do you find that to be true?
Oh yeah, very much so. River people?
Yeah.
We call ourselves river people.
So I'll start getting up to speed on the right phrase.
Yeah, yeah.
So nobody's going to be mad at me if I say river people.
No.
Okay.
They'll be more understanding of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
River people have been around a long time as far as their interaction and how they perceive the river. It's kind of like some people get it, some people don't.
Yeah.
The river's this beautiful place. It has challenges. It's flat water. It's white water. River people generally are very accommodating. They want to help. They want to see you have a good time. They'll give you their paddle. They'll give you their left shoe. They'll give you a shuttle. They'll blow up your equipment. They'll inflate your equipment. It's just kind of what you do.
Yeah.
Because you might at some time be in that same situation where you forgot something or lost something or are in a predicament that says, I really need some help here. Can you help me? Because we're talking about water. It can be dangerous. It can have elements that you want to be aware of. And when you're on the river and you're paddling and you're in trouble, you need help. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to get to the river and you have difficulty getting there, you need help. River people.
Yeah, you know, I think with Yukon and Bean, you maybe shuttled them around dams, et cetera.
I did.
I mean, part of what I would like to do is let the film show people how do you navigate that or get around that. So one way is you pick them up. You know, that's a service that you offer, right?
Kind of.
Yeah.
With Yukon and Bean, those were just some cool cats that had sure. come by, said yeah. that they were getting ready to start this multi-day, they did the whole river
right.
kind of thing. And I was interested simply because I was a river person,
right.
river people.
That's right.
And
see, I want the river people to come to this movie. So
yes, we'll have, absolutely. That's right. So when they got through and beginning their planning process, they understood that there's this one section, this segment, that they needed a portage around, a shuttle around it. It would make their life so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And they're like, really?
Right.
And so I was like, yeah, it's to me, and there were several things that fell in place. The shuttle was out north. Mm-hmm. I live out north.
Right.
It was in the morning. It was simply timing, coordination. I'll pick you up at this time. And that's exactly what happened. I brought my truck and my trailer at 7:45. I pulled up to the designated spot. They were coming off the river, unloading all their gear. We loaded, we moved them. We got them back to the next entry point and off they went. And I came to work. It was not a big deal
sure.
for me.
So is there three dams? Is that right?
There are at least three.
And if you're in a kayak, part of this is just sort of starting to learn about that section of the river.
Right.
If you're in a kayak, can you get out and carry that kayak around in
yes.
every spot or not?
Well, in some places you can and can't. I believe at the Redmond Dam,
mm-hmm.
it would be a long walk with your kayak. Walk,
right.
walk, walk.
Yeah, yeah.
So part of it is pre-planning and asking lots of questions and finding the information before you even set out on the trail.
Right.
You're aware of the surroundings before you even get going.
That's something you can learn then if you watch the film.
I'll have been there.
I'll say, look,
watch
Dave,
this
is how many dams there are.
That's
this
right.
is how you get around.
Yep.
This is how far you have
and
to.
And it's information, and it shouldn't be something that is information that's held simply because you don't want other people to do it. That's the whole point. We want other people to see it and to be safe about it.
So the, I guess tell us about your 7 mile
sure.
trip. And then also after that, how does, you know, who keeps the river clean? And,
yeah.
You know, go ahead.
Yeah. So we do offer a 7 mile canoe, kayak, float trip. That's all we've ever done. Mm-hmm. 1 or 2 years I experimented going to the Tuckasegee, which is another river west of here in Dillsboro,
mm-hmm.
offering it as a next level up beginner class one, class two canoeing trip. I just quickly found that I needed a whole nother body of staff to run two businesses. So I quickly brought that back down and said, let's just run 7 miles. So we do 7 miles through the Biltmore Estate property, flat water path. That's all we've ever done. It's really, it's do one thing, do it well. Keep it really simple. Don't get confused with where people are coming and going.
Do so when it comes to keeping it clean and getting trash out or old tires, or
it's huge.
Who does that?
It's huge. So again, we have to remember the length of time that we've been in business, and long before the other outfitters and or influence on the river, we were doing just that. On our days off, a group of us as staff would take our canoes. There might be two, there might be four, there might be six of us, each in a canoe. And what had happened was, early years, people would come off the river. How was your trip? You guys have a nice time? You see any wildlife? All the answers were, yeah, we had a great time. We saw wildlife. But we saw a whole bunch of tires.
Mm-hmm.
And so the tires were the goal. And so days off, we'd go out on the river, spend 8 hours on the water.
Wow.
It became a competition to see who could put the most tires in their canoe. So we're getting out of the boat, wrestling. We did, it was called the tire dance.
Uh-huh.
So you boogied yourself on the tire to loosen the tire from the gravel grip, and then you threw it into your boat. So that went on for 10 or 15 years.
I hope we can get a shot at the tire dance.
And so 10 or 15, we were averaging 500 to 700 tires a season.
What did you do with them?
That's the next part of it.
Okay.
So there are groups in town, Riverlink, Asheville Green Works, and Mountain True. Three environmental groups that participate in river cleanups or help facilitate the next step. So the next step is the tires come out, they get put on property, and then Asheville Green Works, as the example, then coordinates with another company, like a trash removal company. This one's called Griffin Waste. Griffin Waste, he's another nice guy, he's a river people. And so he recognizes that it shouldn't cost anybody any money to put a dumpster on site for trash that's been taken out of the river. He's just being a good community steward towards the river. So AOC takes the tires out, Asheville Green Works coordinates the pickup. They actually then would pick up and put the tires in. They take it to the landfill, and now the landfill grants an amnesty to Tire Day. So you don't have to pay to have your tires put. Now, they don't dump them in the landfill. It's all recycled. So there's multi-steps in keeping the river up to speed and clean. It's how it goes. You got to work. It takes everybody.
Right.
I got to mention, there's
sure,
another person. He's a dear friend of mine. His name is Scott Richards.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott Richards was the original tire plucker. And Scotty's still with us. His health is failing, so we're not sure how long he'll be with us. But he was the original guy, and he would spend his weekends, he'd work all week, and he'd spend 2 days on the river picking up tires and trash. And that's what he did for, I'd say, 12 or 15 years. To kind of, and the river's a funny thing.
He was a friend, he didn't really care.
Yeah, he's a friend of mine, close friend.
Right.
And he actually was one that helped me start the shuttle program, where you shuttle someone from point A to B.
Because
he'd come off the river before we had this. We were at another access point, and he'd need a ride back to his car. So I just started giving him a ride. And then he'd come up with all this trash. So we'd put the trash in the truck, and we'd hire him.
Do you guys have pictures or anything? I would love to scan some of those.
Yeah, we can do that. We have them.
That would be great.
He actually has a boat. He doesn't go on the water because of his health right now. But he has a boat called the Rubber Tire Plucker.
Yeah.
It's just old. It's right back here. It's all decked out for him to go and do river trips. So he's worth mentioning. Because he kind of, there's a lot of people. There may be those that see this film and know Scott Richards from his interaction with them and getting them to come to the river and see how he does it. And how he did it was, it wasn't just go float the river and be done. He went and floated the river and do something to make it better.
I like that.
He was unbelievable in his effort to do that.
Yeah, I think that, for example, just the idea that I know why my family is on the river and why we're trying to get to the end, and how that, the idea that you're going to go out in a boat and you're going to try to, I mean, it gives a little extra purpose in it,
yep,
to what you're doing.
Very much so.
You got right into my next question, which was just some people that you think are important to the river that are maybe good friends or you know about. Who else maybe should we talk to?
You've talked to Hartwell Carson.
Right.
He's a great guy. Riverkeeper. You should definitely talk to Eric Bradford at Asheville Greenworks. There are those in the organization Riverlink. Some are, they, Riverlink has different, their mission statement is to live, work, and play on the French Broad River, or something to that effect. So there are those, and Hartwell works with and for Mountain True.
Yep.
So you need Mountain True, Asheville Greenworks, Eric, and then you need Riverlink, and I'm not sure who the contact is there.
Yeah, I can definitely track that down. So, two more questions.
You got it.
What are some of your other favorite things to do around here? So you're on the river, you're here. What do you like to do? Like, what do you like to eat? Where do you like to hang out?
White Duck Taco.
Do you just go home? Okay.
White Duck Taco is definitely high on the list.
What are some of your, what do you order at White Duck?
White Duck, Bangkok shrimp, or the Thai peanut.
I have never been there. So
fish tacos.
That's a shame. I love fish tacos.
And he's a really interesting cat too. So he had this vision. He started this one little taco shop, and now he has four or five. He's got two in Asheville. One's downtown. One's right down here in the River Arts District. And then he's got one in Charleston, and then he's got one down towards Tennessee.
Good for him, right?
White Duck Taco.
I like those kind of stories.
Yeah.
Do you have any star inflatables, or that's not what you
do? Yeah, we do star inflatables.
Do you know anything about them? Because they're not very far away from here, right? They're Travelers Rest South Carolina, I think those are made.
Yeah.
Do you know them at all or not?
Yeah, I've done business with them. Yeah. We have some of their rafts, and we have some of their paddle boards.
Because we might go talk to them.
Yeah.
Just because that happens to be the boat that we have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got White Duck Taco, nothing else. Home. It sounds like your house.
Oh, yeah. I am so fortunate. I have this piece of property. It's a beautiful, and I like this piece of property when there's people here. It indicates that the business is moving and working. But I also like this property at 7 o'clock in the morning when there's nobody here.
Yeah.
And I like this property at 6 o'clock at night when nobody's here. It's a different feeling here. We camp here. We have parties here. Also, home is the most quiet refuge. Even if I'm here at 7 a.m. or 6 p.m, there still may be somebody either coming or going, or an inquiry is made. So I'm not completely isolated. But going home, there goes Rusty, big trucker on the road. He always honks at us. Going home.
How do you know him?
Rusty?
Yeah.
Oh, Rusty's a great one. But going home is simply this complete solitude refuge, and that's where the wood shop is. Big barn that I built on this 20 acres where there's no distraction. There's nobody.
So, cool. Yeah, so
we should mention Rusty.
I want to tell you why what that reminds me of. So Thomas Wolfe, big writer in the area. He has this story called The Near and the Far.
Yep.
And there's a train engineer who always honks at this woman who's on her thing, and then he goes to see her eventually, and that's the end of the story, and it doesn't go as well as he thought. It sounds like your ending is happier. So how did you meet Rusty?
Rusty is a paddler. He's a paddle person. Mm-hmm. He's paddle people. He actually, we host an event called the Classique. It's a race event. Called the French Broad Classique.
When is that?
It's in the spring. This will be coming next year, I think 7 years running.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting group of people, wide range of ages, young and then some very senior men and women that are still paddling very well and successfully. So the Classique is just that. It's a classic race, different categories of boat styles. Rusty was one of those people that was a boater, a racer, and he and I just got to be friends, as I have a lot of. We all get it. We kind of like each other in some way. And so now Rusty, on his days off, comes and works. He volunteers at the AOC on our busy weekends.
That's here.
Asheville Outdoor Center.
That's what you call it.
AOC. AOC.
Yep.
He comes and volunteers, and he posts up at some of the areas on the trip as a safety boater. because he likes to be on the water. He likes just being out there, but he also understands that as a safety boater, he's out there to kind of help the busy days, more people, more potential. The busy days, he kind of ushers the day through. And now, so his day job is a truck driver. He's an independent truck driver. And so we always know when Rusty's going by, as he just did, he's got a big red truck, big flatbed. He hauls for Silverman. He honks his horn. Yeah. We always hear Rusty roll by.
That's great.
Yes.
So the answer to this question might be we covered it, but so it's a film about the French Broad River.
Yep.
It's about the people who use it. It's about the political and social issues that surround it. Is there stuff that has occurred to you that we should talk about or think about that we haven't covered?
There are some big things. Yep. Duke Energy.
Right.
The coal ash pits. And that would be something where Mountain True has a much clearer definition on what's going on. But the Dan River in Eastern Carolina several years ago had a coal ash spill. It completely devastated the river and miles and miles and miles and miles of it. So that's one thing that should be always kind of at the front of what we need to be. How do we help fix it?
Right.
We're not putting Duke Energy down. Everybody needs power. There are alternatives.
Hartwell did a little putting down of Duke Energy.
Yeah, he probably could.
Some people in the film will put down Duke Energy. Yeah. Right.
I'm not that way.
Right.
But that is a consideration. The ongoing. So what we see with pollution and what we see in the river is stuff that comes off of parking lots. So that's another way that the river's changed. The river, typically, you don't see a lot of trash. So the river's, I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say it's an 8 from years ago when we started. And you should even reference Wilma Dykeman.
Yeah, I've
seen her.
Just finishing
her
book.
Okay, good.
I almost was going to ask you about the gem mining. You know, I mean, I don't know if the gem mining is mostly just fun or, I mean,
the gem mining's fun. It's the material's not received from the river.
Okay, yeah.
The gem mining at the Outdoor Center is a salted activity. So the material's there for them to find.
Yeah, yeah.
It's put there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that was a little divert. When you talk to me, I get on the little tangents
The river definitely has lots of history and mineral history. Of course, gold was first discovered in continental U.S. in North Carolina, not far from here.
Mm.
There are many areas.
I was reading in the Dykeman book about Ginzig and
ginseng
and that being the gold.
Yeah,
so
that's
far.
Some gold,
yeah,
too. So there's definitely many areas in the upper reaches, like in the Highlands area, where many very big sized rubies, semi-precious stone has been found. So that's kind of my tie-in to the gem mining.
Yeah. So I sort of sidetracked you on the Duke Energy and more issues. Are there other stuff that...
Back to the pollution or the...
Yep.
It kind of... If you go back to the source and try to figure out how to keep it contained there. So that is something I think either Hartwell did or a while back Riverlink did, where they were creating these trash booms. Mm. And a trash boom would be a trash collector, a big giant cloth tubular thing that would be placed in parking lots or points of access at the parking lot that goes to the creek. Then goes to the stream and then to the river.
Mm.
So I think it's just continued awareness and support, whether you're contributing to a nonprofit or you're a volunteer, because there's river cleanups going on all the time. People, the organizations we've mentioned, they need the volunteer support to go out and actually physically pick up the trash.
We're going to do that this Saturday, Swan and the River.
Good deal.
Cool. Well, thanks for talking to us, Dave.
Glad to be here.
That was great.